Hello and welcome to Pitchside with Toby Reynolds, a Sports Gazette podcast, where each episode we take a deep dive into a new sporting topic with a new guest. I'm your host Toby, and this week I'll be joined by Sam Brady to discuss MMA and the underrepresentation of the sport within the British media. Sam is the combat sports co-editor at the Sports Gazette, and is also one of the hosts of the Sports Gazette's combat sports show, Punch and Pod. Throughout this episode, we look at the strength of British MMA right now, how it was snubbed at the Sports Personality of the Year awards, and whether a Netflix-style documentary might help improve the popularity. I'm now joined by Sam. How are you, mate?
Oh, mate, I'm brilliant. To be fair, I'm fantastic. Yeah, I was just saying, I'm really glad that I'm finally on someone else's podcast away from my own stuff. So gives me a bit of pressure off me today asking the questions. I can just sit back and relax.
Very much so. Yeah, we're gonna talk a little bit about MMA, your speciality or one of your specialities. What was the first thing that got you into MMA?
So I started watching MMA around 2014, 2015. I think a lot of people as well, probably like me, got into MMA when obviously the notorious Conor McGregor was coming through, and I feel like a lot of fans fell in love with sort of MMA and the UFC because of him. What that would make me, 13 years old, probably watching prime McGregor. I don't know if a 13-year-old should be watching the UFC at that age, but he hooked me in, and then I've watched it ever since then, really. So what, probably like 8 years, and then I did a bit of MMA training for about 4 or 5 years. I've fallen in love with it since then, really, and since obviously 2014, 2015, I've seen the progression and the growth massively, really. So yeah.
Definitely, yeah. When you with your MMA training, did you find that helped you sort of find an even bigger interest in the sport? Because I always find playing a sport gives you a different type of understanding that really helps.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Because I would watch fights and know sort of what they're going for, or because especially MMA, where you've got so many different technical aspects to it. You've got the striking aspect, but then also you've got the ground game, you've got submissions. So if you've trained MMA, I mean, you don't even need to train MMA for that long, really. But if you've trained, if you know the basics of MMA and sort of you can watch the fighters and say if you're watching a fighter on the ground and you can see, okay, he's going for an armbar, he's going for a rear naked choke, he's going for a submission before it actually plays out. So it gives you more of, yeah, that aspect of, you know what you're watching, if that makes sense. Whereas I mean you can watch UFC and MMA and never trained in your life and have a really good understanding of it. But as you said, I think in any sport, really, if you play the sport, it does definitely give you like that insight into the sport.
On the technical aspects you mentioned there, the sort of striking grounds, what are the kind of difference for some of our listeners who maybe haven't watched MMA or any of the UFC stuff before?
Yeah, so MMA and the UFC and there's obviously a lot of other promotional MMA companies, but yeah, so the MMA is basically, it's a mix of, well, it's MMA stands for mixed martial arts, so it's a mix of basically every technique, combat sports technique you can use in MMA, and you can use all of those techniques to win. There's a couple of ways of winning a fight. There's obviously the striking, so that brings in sort of the elements from the boxing world of sort of the jab and the cross and sort of the technical side of striking. And you see a lot of fighters who are predominantly just strikers. If you are going to be an MMA fighter, you do need to know basic ground game. But you see a lot of fighters just come in and they are predominantly strikers, and they tend to win their fights through knockout or TKO when the ref steps in. And then obviously you've got the ground game as well, and vice versa, really, where you get a lot of fighters also who are predominantly just ground fighters and not that great technically striking, but again, they need to know basics of striking, and they need to be able to hold their own if they want to reach a high level. And then on the ground, this is where it really gets technical, because there's so many different martial arts that are on that go to the ground and that can be used. There's judo, there's Brazilian jiu-jitsu, there's loads of others. And then obviously through learning them, you learn sort of the arts of submissions, and there's loads of different submissions. Yeah, I could go into loads of them, and then obviously the defense as well. You need to know how to defend those submissions, so when inevitably every fighter will end up on their back at some point, but it's how you deal with someone pressuring you and wrestling you and holding you on the ground, and how well do you defend sort of the submissions, and how well is your takedown defense? Because that's the thing, every round starts on the feet, so if you are a striker, then every round is gonna start in your favor. But if you're coming up against an amazing ground game specialist and who's got an amazing takedown record, they're just gonna take you down constantly and constantly and constantly. So it's about knowing how to defend the takedown for a start, but then if you do get taken down, how to defend submissions, and you've got arm bars, you've got neck cranks, neck chokes, you've got knee bars, you've got all sorts, really. The only thing you can't do is 12 to 6 elbow, which if people don't know what that is, if you're thinking about a clock, 12 and 6 is literally vertically down. You can't elbow straight down. You have to angle it, which has caused some controversy of sort of how you really judge that and see score that in the moment. What else can't you do? You can't grab the cage with your fingers. You have to sort of hold yourself up. You can't kick in, let's just kick or punch in the crotch area, let's just say that. You can't knee one big one is you can't knee a grounded opponent. So this actually happens more so than you'd probably think, just because of the fine margins between it. We just had this scenario there, and in the last UFC event, UFC 297, where Arnold Allen, actually an English fighter, he lost his fight, but there was a bit of controversy over basically a grounded opponent is when an opponent has at least one hand on the octagon floor, and you can't knee an opponent in the head when they have that. So yeah, there was a bit of controversy over that, whether Allen had his hand on the ground or not. But yeah, there's loads of different aspects to MMA, really, and that's the thing. It sort of, as I said at the start, it sort of brings every element of combat sports into one fight, and really it is who the start of the UFC, Dana White, the president, even said himself, they set it up as a competition of who is the best fighter in the world. Is it this a boxing guy, or is it a sumo wrestler? Mate, you should have seen the first ever UFC events. You had like, and we might touch on it in a bit, but you had sumo wrestlers coming up against boxers, because at the start they didn't know how to regulate it, what the rules were. So you had 200-pound sumo wrestlers going in there against like 100-pound boxers, and it was just so unregulated. But the basic fundamentals were who's the better combat sports athlete. So yeah.
On the technical aspects, is there sort of one of the techniques known sort of to dominate another? Is it almost sort of like if you're a bit heavier, you want to be more of a striker or vice versa? Or is it different for weight classes as well?
Not really. I mean, traditionally, some weight classes have fallen into sort of stereotypes and sort of. And you get it in boxing a lot, where the heavyweights traditionally are known as just sluggers who are just strikers and don't really wrestle just because of how big they are. But in this new era, which we might touch on, especially with Tom Aspinall, we are seeing a new generation of heavyweights who are sort of breaking the barrier of what it means to be a heavyweight. And I think really the way I've always looked at it is to be a top level MMA fighter, you have to be brilliant in or good in all levels of MMA, all aspects of MMA. I think you can't really, I mean, the only way you can really be a high level athlete and is and focus on one element like the ground game or the striking is if you're a high elite level in that area, in that specific area. Like for example, Khabib, for example, he's considered one of the GOATs, one of the greatest of all time, and he was majorly just a wrestler, and he would just wrestle you, didn't really entertain the striking, and would just wrestle you and submit you, and he just focused and focused and focused on the wrestling. So over years he got amazingly good at wrestling to a point where okay, he didn't really strike, but he didn't really need to. Whereas you look at John Jones, for example, who is widely considered the greatest of all time. He is sort of great in all areas. He's great in his wrestling, he's great in his striking, he's that John Jones, I think, is probably widely considered one of the greatest of all times, not just because of his fights and his record and what he's done in this era and different eras and dominated different eras, but how good he is in all aspects, in his submission game, in his striking game. And when you face a fighter, and this is why I always say the best fighters are the most well-rounded fighters, because when you face a fighter like that, the unpredictability and the training you need to do in all aspects to know what you're going to be hit with when the cage door shuts, I think that is one thing where it puts those fighters apart from the rest. I think you can look at fighters like Leon Edwards as well, who we'll touch on, who he's just great all round. He's got great submission, he's got great takedown defense, great striking, and he's just a great all-round fighter. And I think he exposes a lot of other fighters who aren't as well-rounded as him. So yeah, to answer your question, no, there's not a one game plan of how to win a fight, but it in my opinion, the more well-rounded you are, the better you are, really.
Now, so MMA started to become a proper sport in the 20th century, and UFC in the 90s was one of the was now probably the biggest MMA promoter. In 2001, the Fertitta brothers, Frank and Lorenzo, alongside Dana White, who you've already mentioned, sort of bought UFC. Was there a noticeable change in UFC from the sort of 90s when it was a bit more amateur, maybe to what they've done now?
Yeah, I think Dana White and the Fertitta brothers wanted they looked at the way the UFC, well, yeah, the way the UFC was being run, and sort of the promotion was being run, and they wanted to sort of make it a more publicly acceptable sort of promotion and sort of event. They wanted people to sort of look at MMA and sort of respect the sport and give it the credit it deserved. Because we saw in the 90s, as I've already mentioned, the promotion before Dana White and the Fertitta brothers came in was just it was human cockfighting, and it wasn't good, and it wasn't a good look for MMA, and the rules weren't really regulated. There was no weight classes. For any of your listeners, I would highly suggest to go back and look at the first ever sort of UFC fights. It was an absolute joke, really, to be honest. And this is coming from a guy who loves the UFC. So yeah, when Dana and the Fertitta brothers came in, they sort of looked at the promotion and looked at MMA, and they basically had to just build the business from the ground up. They had to. I saw a clip the other day of sort of they didn't even own the rights to UFC.com. They had to call the website a different thing. They basically just had to build a business from the ground up. And even at the first early years of when they came in, it still was a little bit of a mess, and the rules were a little bit sort of all over the gaff. But then when they brought in, they started to bring in personalities and fighters like Tito Ortiz and like Chuck Liddell and sort of build storylines and build rivalries. And I think that was the sort of first phase of getting fans interested into the sport. I think, look, you could have gone down the approach of sort of trying to educate people on the art and the technique of MMA, but I think that original sort of thing to get and to grasp fans in is to sort of just get the personalities, get the rivalries, and then we'll sort of look to educate people on actually the sport of MMA, and then as we've seen gradually over years and years and years, the level of competition is just like nothing else nowadays. I mean, if you go back and look at fights from as you said, when they came in sort of the early 2000s, and even probably from like 2000 to 2010 to 2010 onwards, I truly believe those are two different eras of the UFC. Just the first decade and the second decade. I mean, honestly, the competition is to another level. And then as I mentioned before, when McGregor came in sort of 2013, 14, 15, that obviously took the UFC onto another spectrum, which I don't even know if they were prepared to sort of the media attention and the coverage the sport would get at that point. But yeah, I think at the start when they came in, it was just all about changing the perception really that the public had.
Was it just the fact that bigger personalities have come in the sort of since 2010 that was the major difference? I mean, Conor McGregor, as you mentioned, probably the biggest name within MMA and UFC, partly because of UFC, and he was obviously known massively for that, but also what he's done outside of it has almost drawn more attention to UFC, do you think?
Yeah, I also think as well, as I mentioned, the level of competition has just gone up. The more diverse in weight classes, that there's been more weight classes added. Of course, the introduction of women fighters into UFC has brought in a different audience, and Ronda Rousey obviously being the first woman to come in, and she also, I think, changed perceptions, not just even from a side of female fighting, but of fighters in general, where I think there was a lot of people looking at sort of women fighters and sort of personalities, and then Ronda Rousey came in and just smashed through all barriers really that she that was sort of set from the public's perception. But yeah, I think, as you said, when the McGregor factor and then the Rousey factor, and then there was just a lot more, one, a lot more personalities to sort of grow the sport and to gain fans. But also, these personalities were very good at fighting. They were amazing high-level athletes who just dominated their divisions within the time. And I think when from any fan, if you watch something that's never been done before, you're always going to be gripped, and you're always going to want to watch what plays out. And I think a lot of people were sort of invested in the UFC in sort of the early 2010 era because we wanted to see where the UFC would go from sort of the early years to where they were starting to go, because they were really starting to grow their brand exponentially. I mean, the tour they went on with Jose Aldo was something we've never seen before. The McGregor Jose Aldo world tour before their fight, they went to Brazil, Ireland, America, like, and I think, yeah, McGregor sort of pushed them into a route where they were gradually getting there, but I think McGregor sort of fast-tracked them to that place. And yeah, and I think back then it was sort of Dana White and the UFC would focus on the personalities and would sort of build their financial year on sort of these personalities and the events they put on around these personalities. And also you had top level opponents as well, like the likes of Jose Aldo, who hadn't lost in 10 years before McGregor, and you had the Ronda Rouseys, and you had the Bispings, and you had Luke Rockhold, and you had all these fighters who were just from different regions as well. The UFC was globalizing. It was scouting different fighters, and this is where I say where we sort of saw a different era where, yes, they were looking at the personalities, but they were also high level fighters. And then obviously a fighter like Conor McGregor doesn't help your business, does it? So.
Definitely not. Yeah, I mean, since then MMA and UFC has continued to grow. I mean, particularly in Britain, the strength of British MMA is probably one of the strongest it's been at the moment. Leon Edwards, the sort of welterweight champion, and Tom Aspinall, who's the interim heavyweight champion. Why do you think UFC has grown so much over the last sort of few years within sort of Britain?
Yeah, well, I think it's been brewing for a couple of years now, actually, to be fair. I think obviously we had the first ever English champ in Michael Bisping. And then I think Leon's been on the cusp for quite a few years now. He's been in and amongst those rankings, and then as you said, Tom Aspinall as well. But I think it's sort of the high level gyms we have in England now. We have Tom Aspinall obviously fighting out of Atherton in Manchester, and then we have Leon Edwards up in Birmingham, and then of course someone we didn't mention there, we have Paddy Pimblett and Molly McCann also fighting out of Liverpool. So I think we're sort of seeing the vast amounts of variety in the gyms we have in England now, and sort of also the opportunities that I think that these English fighters are getting. As I said, within the UFC and a lot of other promotional companies, really, you had a lot of American-based fighters, and it was predominantly just an American sort of sport that didn't really touch the UK shores. But it's been here. It's been here, but it just hasn't had the recognition. It hasn't been in the spotlight, whereas you see over in boxing's been a massive sport within the UK for years, and it's always been in the media spotlight, and that is predominantly because of the sort of UK personalities and the English personalities we've had in boxing, and not just the fighters, the promoters as well, and the promotions, the likes of Eddie Hearn and the Frank Warrens, and then obviously the fighters like Joshua and sort of the historic fighters like David Haye and Tony Bellew, and then you go back to like the likes of Lennox Lewis and stuff. But historically, we've had massive boxers from England, and not really that many MMA fighters. But I think that is also because of how new of a sport MMA is, and how new sort of these organizations are. Let's not forget the UFC only turned 30 last year. So I think the opportunities have been limited for these English fighters to really make a name for themselves on the top level competitions within MMA. But now they're getting a chance. We see a we're well we're in a real golden generation of English fighters now. As you said, Tom Aspinall in the heavyweight division, interim champ, potentially lining up a fight against arguably the greatest of all time, John Jones, which if that fight were to happen, I mean, it would take English MMA onto another level, considering an English fighter in Tom would be fighting the greatest athlete we've ever seen within the UFC. I mean, that just personifies how much English MMA has grown, really. And then obviously Leon Edwards defending his belt twice this year, really putting his name out there, and as one of the greatest welterweights we've ever seen. I think he's really now putting a resume together where we are gonna start to put him in the conversation of the Michael Bispings as the pioneers for English MMA. And then obviously Paddy. It is a young fighter coming up as well. So, yeah, lots to look forward to really within English MMA.
How much of a factor do you think the media is for the lack of promotion of UFC?
Yeah, look, I've always had a problem with the sort of the perception MMA and even boxing really, but MMA specifically gets within the English media. I think the English media, especially the year just gone, have really, well, the past couple of years really have picked and choosed what to promote and what not to promote. And the problem that I have with it is we're seeing a golden generation within English MMA at the minute, but it won't last forever. Tom Aspinall and Leon Edwards will eventually lose their belt. So we need to celebrate these athletes while they're still in their prime, while we can. And I think MMA within the English media, because of maybe, and the UFC, because of maybe the history it's got, of, as I said, the early years of it weren't great, and they're still maybe feeling the effects of sort of the reputation they have. But I think the media has a job to play in that as well, though. We need to promote these English fighters. We need to start recognizing MMA and the UFC as a serious sport. The UFC is one of the fastest, if not the fastest growing sports company right now in the world. It's broke in 2024, it broke in 2023, sorry, the UFC broke countless records. For instance, the top five pay-per-view events at Madison Square Garden, a venue that has a history of boxing events. The Knicks play there every week. Top five pay-per-view events are all UFC events. So I think the way the English media especially sort of push over MMA and don't even mention it as if it's not even a sport. I think it's I don't really get it, to be fair. And I think, look, Leon Edwards defended his belt twice last year, once on home soil in the UK, bringing a numbered event back to London since Michael Bisping. He's actually surpassed George St. Pierre, who's considered one of the welterweight greatest of all time. He's surpassed his winning record. So I think, and we just had Sports Personality of the Year last year, and he didn't get a mention. He didn't get a nominee. And I'm looking at it and I'm going, how? He's defended his belt twice this year. He's the first ever English champion since Michael Bisping. How, what is sufficient enough to get a nominee? I mean, I really don't get it. And then even Tom Aspinall, he became the interim champ last year. He didn't get a nominee. At least one of them should at least be nominated, because if we're not celebrating our English athletes, then what is the point of sort of the award? I mean, look, like, every credit to Mary Earps, I think, who won it, and we need to promote, and it's the same with women's football, and we need to be an advocate for these sports who don't really get the recognition that they deserve, really. And all credit to Mary Earps and the other nominees, but I just don't get what Leon Edwards has to do to sort of get a nominee. What else does the guy have to do? And again, I think if people won't also know the stuff Leon Edwards has had to go through as well, if you don't follow the UFC that well. But in his last fight, he came up against a fighter called Colby Covington, who is known for being very controversial. He's known for saying the things that people won't say. He's known for crossing the line that people wouldn't usually cross. And for people who don't know about Leon, he's had a very tough upbringing. He lost his dad when he was very young in gang violence. And he came up against a guy who Colby Covington, who used that as a weapon to try and get in the head of Colby, get in the head of Leon, sorry. And the mentally taxing sort of barrier that Leon would have had to get over in order to go in there and dominate Colby in the way he dominated him, and not look phased at all, and just look ice cold in in sort of that fight in Madison Square Garden and just dominate him in the way he dominated him. I think we really, really need to recognize Leon as one of the greatest English athletes in this current time, because the commitment and the time and just the effort that this guy puts in and what he's been through, I think it just needs to be recognized. And same with Tom Aspinall. I mean, Tom Aspinall, he what a year he had last year. He fought a fight on 12 days' notice against Sergey Pavlovich, who is one of the hardest hitting heavyweights you'll ever likely to meet. So taking that fight was very dangerous, but again, he knocks him out, and he knocks him out comfortably, and he's so quick, he's so effective. And Tom Aspinall is one of the sort of front runners of this new generation of this heavyweight division that I talked about earlier, where we've never seen a heavyweight like Tom Aspinall. He's changing the game of what it means to be a heavyweight because of how quick this cat is. He's so quick, he's so good at wrestling, and again, he's so well-rounded that put him in there against the John Jones. He's on Twitter at the minute, and he's feeling hard done by, because he wants that fight against John Jones, and he wants to prove that he can beat the greatest of all time. And I think it's up to sort of the sports media within, and also the mainstream media as well within England, to recognize English MMA as one of the front runners really within the sports industry. Because if you look at other sports, I mean, tell me what other English athletes are doing what the UFC boys are doing right now. I mean, you've got Tom Aspinall in the heavyweight division who's dominating, and then you've got Leon Edwards who's dominating in his division. We've never had at the same time two English fighters who are doing what they're doing. So I think we just need to give them the recognition they deserve. And I feel for the boys, I really do. And they didn't get a nominee in sports personality. And I was like, okay, I don't really get what the point of the award is, but fine. If you don't want to recognize them, don't recognize them. But then when they also didn't get a mention in the New Year's honors list, I had to say something, because I'm like, these boys need to get some sort of recognition before they're not here anymore. And God forbid we look back at a time and go, wow, those boys were one of the best English athletes we've ever had, and yet we didn't appreciate them at the times.
Do you think there's anything in particular within the media that might change this perspective? Is there anything sort of that might really throw UFC and MMA to the forefront of the British of the sports?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing you have to consider is having more events over here. I think the way the UFC works is predominantly the events are in America, but they do, and they have done in the past year, they are trying to go more global in sort of having numbered events, in particular the pay-per-view events, in different countries. And in England, we tend to only get traditionally one event a year, and traditionally that's not even a pay-per-view event. Traditionally, that's a fight night where it's sort of you put English fighters on the card, and it's because we haven't had, since Michael Bisping, English champions. Whereas now, hopefully, we start seeing, with the likes of obviously Leon Edwards being welterweight champ and now Tom being interim heavyweight champ, we start to see pay-per-view events come more to England. I think we'll definitely have at least one in 2024. But I'd like to see fight nights as well, a mix of fight nights and sort of pay-per-view events, and in different places as well. Dana loves and tends to use the O2, but there's been and he doesn't really he said he doesn't really like going to stadiums. So, but Tom's been an advocate for going to Manchester, and then Paddy wants to one time fight out of Anfield, so we could see that. And another thing to sort of within the mainstream media, I think there's just a stereotype, I think, at the minute with blood sports. I think blood sports and boxing as well have never really sat well with the English media, I think, and especially nowadays, to avoid being too controversial, I think we're in a bit of a woke time at the minute where it's very what let's put on your TV, let's put let's sort of portray the sports we want going out on TV that your grandmother would watch and that your family would watch, sort of those very family friendly PG sort of atmosphere. And I think the thing is, MMA and UFC, it isn't this brutal sort of aggressive sort of sport that I think a lot of people have in their minds. I think sort of people look when they think MMA and when they think UFC, they think, oh no, that's too brutal. Elbows, you can't be elbowing, you can't be kneeing people. But I think if people actually start to look into the sport and look into the art of the sport and actually look at sort of the level of competition and sort of the rules and sort of how it is regulated. And I think the mainstream media have a job to play in changing the stereotypes. I think they've done a great job in sort of changing stereotypes within, as we mentioned, Mary Earps, within women's football and the coverage they're getting. They've changed perceptions in all sorts of things. But I think MMA is still one of those things where they look at and they go, do we want to bother trying to change perceptions within MMA and within the UFC? And if there's ever a time to put the time and effort into trying to change the perception around the UFC, it's now, considering the personalities, as we've just mentioned, the English personalities we have. I think if it doesn't happen now, I fear that it might never happen, because if you don't sort of give the UFC and MMA the coverage now, and sort of market Leon Edwards and Tom Aspinall, because they're very marketable people. They're such sound blokes, mate, and they're so and Paddy and Molly over there, and you've got Nathaniel Wood as well, and you've got so many just great personalities, just nice people. And you can look at other fighters within the UFC and Americans and other people and sort of go, you know what, they're good fighters, and maybe they get the promo in America, but they're not actually nice people. Whereas we've got nice champions. We've actually got fighters who, when they go in their cage, they're nasty. They're great. They're great fighters. But if you get them in front of a TV camera, mate, they'll be loved by fans, because they're really nice people, and you can really get into sort of their background. And as I said, Leon has his own background story with the unfortunate passing of his dad, and then Tom Aspinall's got a great story where his head coach is his dad. So I mean, you can build into stories like that, and then there's a real opportunity for the mainstream media to sort of capitalize here. And I'm not saying put Leon Edwards on the billboard of Leicester Square. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying give him maybe a 10-minute feature package. Give him. I'm not even saying he has to win sports personality of the year. I'm just saying just give him a nominee. Just recognize that he is here. And I think that's all that MMA fans and MMA fighters, especially English MMA fighters, we just want that recognition.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a, as you mentioned, a sort of almost sort of cycle in the way that if MMA and UFC is not sort of in the forefront of media, people don't know who they are, so they don't really want to like sort of keep promoting it because it's sort of unknown athletes. But I mean, a lot of mine, and I'm sure a lot of the general public's perspective of UFC is maybe I saw a lot anyway of like knockout compilations and sort of flying elbows and sort of, I don't know, submissions and everything. So do you think that there's almost maybe a problem with the way that UFC are trying to promote themselves that maybe offers a very different perspective from the way that maybe would be the best way of promotion in the UK? And there's perhaps almost a divergence away from the sort of British media to UFC?
Yeah, the thing is, look, I'm saying all of this, but look, I get it. If boxing and MMA and being knocked out and being submitted isn't your thing, I do get it. I get if you don't want to sort of, if you're of a sort of mindset of you don't want to see someone get knocked out and it's just not for you. And I totally get that. But what I'm trying to say is, but recognize it as a sport and recognize it as an art. And the thing is with the UFC, I think they have to sort of, they can't really shy away from the knockouts and the submissions. That's just part and parcel of the sport. But I think for them, as I said about Leon and Tom, it's about in the engagement of fans is really about sort of the backstory of the fighters and sort of what's their story, what's the fighter's story, where do they come from, what's their training been like, what sort of who do they train with, what every fighter has a story and that story can be told and it's up to media outlets to tell that story. And I think at the minute it's only MMA outlets that are really obviously bothering to tell that story. But yeah, I think the UFC can work alongside like the mainstream media. And I think there are they last year that the business is growing to a point which it's amazing for me to see, really, to be honest, to watch it from 2013, 2015 to now and see the growth of the business. It's honestly incredible. They're linking up with sort of mainstream content creators. They've got a promotion with Prime and they're doing their thing with KSI and Logan Paul. They've got a content creator called Nina who's an influencer. And they are trying to touch into sort of the mainstream sort of content creators. And I think the way that MMA and the UFC in particular are going at the minute is, look, they know they're not going to be the most popular within mainstream media and within what I like to call sort of the basic TV of like the BBC and the ITVs. And then they're never gonna at the minute retouch into those markets, but what they're trying to do is touch into different markets, trying to touch into sort of the younger market and the influencer market and the content creator market because then they can't be ignored. And the records they are doing, they will get to a point soon, whether it's this year, whether it's the next year, where the mainstream media, whether we still have English champs at that point, they won't be able to ignore the UFC because the records they're breaking and the countries they're going to are just phenomenal. I mean, what they went to, just to rattle off a few, they went to Brazil, England, France for the first time, Paris last year actually. And then this year they're going to Saudi Arabia for the first time. They went to Abu Dhabi last year. I'm sure I'm missing loads here, but yeah, they're going to Spain for the first time, and they might have a Spanish champ in a couple of weeks actually, they just had the first South African champ in Dreyfus, du Plessis, so yeah, I mean, and that's another thing. I think the more champions you can have from different countries, I think that will also obviously grow that sport within that country. So then we will get to a point where we have had a South African champ, where we've had a Brazilian champ, a English champ, a French champ. You know, there's so many different sort of outlets and sort of ways in which the UFC can sort of market itself nowadays that I think countries are being more accepting to the fact of the UFC and MMA. And it's sort of at the minute, I saw a thing, a tweet the other day where it's sort of the UFC is the MMA community's little secret. Whereas, give it a couple years or 2 years, as I said, hopefully, I hope that it will be in and amongst one of the biggest sports we see within the sports industry, and especially within the UK and England.
Over the past 5 years, the or I seem to have found that the biggest way sports seem to have grown, and it's worked really well for F1, have been these sort of documentaries coming through Netflix and Prime, All or Nothing, Drive to Survive probably being the biggest success story that's really grown in Britain in particular, and America as well. Probably be one of the most popular sports, 18 to 25-year-old sort of demographic. Do you think that a sort of Netflix, Amazon Prime style documentary that really could show the sort of personalities behind UFC might really push it to the forefront?
Yeah, massively, massively. I mean, as you said, Drive to Survive and Breakpoint now with the tennis. I think that does get a lot of fans who aren't interested in those sports just watching the documentary because it's sports. Like for example, I wasn't a massive fan of F1. Watch Drive to Survive. Get me watching every season. Do you know what I mean? And they have tried things like this, the UFC, they have this ongoing reality TV show called The Ultimate Fighter, which they've been doing since probably the early 2010s, I think, maybe even earlier. But that's been a show which it's been good, but it's never really taken off. It's basically a Big Brother type show where you have two coaches who are fighters, and then you get sort of other fighters who are fighting across America in lowly gyms, all in one house, who have to fight each other, and then at the end of it, the winner gets a UFC contract, and it's been good. It's got decent reception back, but it's never really taken off into mainstream media, which I do get because I think the format can be changed a little bit. We have Jake Gyllenhaal and Conor McGregor actually bringing out a movie soon. So and that was one of the scenes in that is going to be from a UFC press conference. Dana White's gonna make his first acting debut, even if it is for 10 seconds. But I think movies like that can help. But yeah, definitely, I mean, I haven't even really thought about it, but you could really do actually a very good all or nothing sort of type documentary on sort of you could base it around a UFC card and sort of get fighters talking about their experience and stuff like that. But I think with that, the problem you might have is Amazon and Netflix giving the green light to allow it to be on their platform because, as I've said, there's still this stereotype around the blood sports where do mainstream organizations like Netflix and like the Amazons want to promote combat sports in that way? I'm not too sure, but I think definitely documentaries like that can help.
Particularly, I think for the younger generation who would be most likely to get into UFC and be interested within it, I think maybe that is the best option. And another option, I guess, the final question is, as you've already touched on him, but Logan Paul and maybe more for the WWE side of things, who have just been or just joined forces with UFC. Do you think maybe having YouTube UFC, YouTube MMA could be a future possibility, or is it almost that actually UFC is too specialized a sport compared to boxing, where it is really starting to become a thing?
Yeah, me and Oscar on our pod talked about it a lot. This sort of influencer boxing thing that's sort of been sort of the trend in the past couple of years. Look, we see a lot of MMA fighters or influencers go into boxing, but we've never seen a boxer or an influencer go into MMA. And I think that is predominantly due to the fact of, and this might trigger a lot of boxing fans if they're listening, but boxing's a easier sport to grasp in terms of you can pick up the basics quickly. Not you won't necessarily be good, but you can pick up the basics of boxing pretty quickly and then have a fight and it go okay. Whereas if you try and do that in MMA, if you have, say, a year's training of MMA, that still will not be enough for you to hold your own in an octagon. You need a good 2, 3, 4 years to even be able to step into an octagon, especially if you're facing a fighter who has had that experience. I think, look, influencer boxing works because it's boxing. I don't think I don't think it would work if it was MMA, and that's why we haven't seen any fighters go the reverse way. And I think the perfect example of that is Francis Ngannou, who was one of the best heavyweights within the UFC, and now has gone over to boxing, and he's making waves over there fighting the likes of Fury and now Anthony Joshua. So I think you can sort of pick up the basics of boxing quicker than MMA, and that's no disrespect to boxing. That's just how it is, just because of all the, as I said at the start of one of your first questions, how technical of a sport MMA is. You have to train, and you have to give it the commitment you need. Otherwise, you're gonna be choked out, and you're gonna be knocked out, and that's just the facts of it. In terms of the WWE deal, I think it's a massive deal for the UFC. It is a massive deal because I think that they've always had a good relationship, the UFC, with the likes of Brock Lesnar coming over to the UFC, and Ronda Rousey and CM Punk, and they've always had a great relationship. And I think Vince McMahon and Dana White are two personalities who are very similar. They love the sports and the industries they're in, and they're fan. They're not just a business person, but they are actually a fan of the business they're running, and I think that really comes through in the decisions they make. And now them joining forces will only grow both businesses tenfold, really. And I think you can sort of, yes, they're come together, but I think the audiences are actually very different. I think you get a different audience watching the WWE than you get watching the UFC. But the hope that I think that they're trying to achieve is you get sort of WWE audience, and then they might watch an MMA fight and go, oh, do you know what? I actually quite like this, and vice versa. So I think it's a big deal, to be honest. And you mentioned Logan Paul there. Obviously, Prime are one of the biggest sponsors within the UFC, and then obviously his brother Jake Paul is doing his own thing in boxing. But hey, look, I'd like to see an influencer or a boxer come over to the UFC and come over to MMA, because I'd just like to see how they do. Tyson Fury was maybe rumoring it a couple years ago, because he was training with Darren Till there for a bit, and Deontay Wilder, maybe he said that maybe one day you could see him in an octagon. But hey, I'd like to see it. I don't think it'll happen anytime soon. But yeah, I mean, if you can get an influencer coming over to the UFC, maybe it would work. But the thing is, Dana White, I don't think would ever do that, because he's always, and this may be a fault on his part, he's always dismissed influencer boxing. He's always said, look, we do the real fighting, we put the real fights together, we don't put that circus together. And I think he's very dismissive of influencer boxing. And to be honest, I think it's because he's seen the brutality and sort of the commitment that these fighters within the UFC put towards their trade and their art. And I think Dana sort of sees it as a bit disrespectful that these influencers think they're real fighters, considering all the years and the dedication that these MMA athletes have put towards the sport. So look, influencer boxing, it's fun, it's cool, but I think you have to take it with a bit of a pinch of salt, which, credit to the influencers and the YouTubers. I have nothing against it. Credit to them getting their money, getting their bag, and they've found their market there. But you also have to look at it and go, if you want to watch real fighting of a high elite level, then you watch boxing and the UFC.
No, amazing. Thanks, Sam, so much. It's been great hearing all of the great insights of British boxing, British MMA, sorry, and the future of MMA generally.
Mate, top man. Good luck with the future episodes, and it's been a pleasure.
Thank you all so much for listening, and make sure you head over and follow us on social media. It's pitchside_podcast on Instagram and TobyReynolds10_ on TikTok and Twitter. Make sure you also head over to the Sports Gazette website to read articles from all of our pundits and writers here at the Sports Gazette. Make sure you like the podcast and give it a rating. It really does help. And make sure to join us next time on Pitchside with Toby Reynolds.